Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and, incidentally, TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. And thank you very much for listening. Coming up on Fridays, normally I try to lavish everybody with a wee bit of appreciation. I like to thank my wonderful crew who have incredible faith in me, God knows why, and also the listeners themselves. Because I find it interesting, a lot of the listeners have some dedication to the show that it baffles me. You know, it's not been around for too long, and already people are starting to say, like, I'm their mouthpiece or something. Thank you. Thank you very much. I almost don't know how to react, because here's the thing. As soon as you start getting appreciated by more than one person at any one time, you start to wonder, am I really as great as they say I am? And I thought to myself, no, I'm not actually that great. All right? And even if I am, I'd have to keep denying it, because otherwise I'd start to become one of the seven words you can't say on radio. Good morning, Will.
Morning, Vinny.
Hey, we've got some... Your thoughts?
On what in particular, Vinny? The success of the show?
Yeah!
Well, yeah, it's getting there. We just need to keep our act up, I suppose. Yeah. Let the people be the judge.
Got to keep the facade going. All right. Just like at Barack H. O'Barry, who now, according to 54% of Americans, should not be re-elected. Which is great. Methinks that people are starting to see...
It's funny how that happens, isn't it? Case,
you know? Oh, yeah. But something tells me that there's only going to be more worse scum to replace him. Like Nicolas Sarkozy orders a breakup of blockades as French protests continue. And nearly a third of France's petrol stations empty or running short, but the president refuses to back down on pensions reform. It's probably because his arm is twisted behind his back by the IMF and World Bank. And because of the fact that he's a globalist slime bag as well, he's not keen on telling them, no, I don't want to, you know, ruthlessly cut back all my people's stuff. On top of that, raw some foods, raw milk, co-op raid conducted by criminal elements of local, state, and federal law enforcement. This in from Natural News by Mike Adams, the health ranger. Apparently, Rawsome Foods, private food buying club in Venice, California, with guns drawn, agents came on in and said, hey, you're selling healthy food? That is evil. It's wrong. It's against the government. And also, interestingly enough, those of you who are trying to, save your, save yourself from harm caused by fatty stuff that you fry with, nonstick cookware chemical causes ADHD in children, new study reveals. It just keeps getting worse, doesn't it? And also, top story, Will, you love this one, dining with the enemy. Al-Qaeda leader linked to 9/11 hijackers, quote, was invited to the Pentagon for lunch after the attacks. All right, this should blow 9/11 right out of the water. All the conspiracy theories all the world around have been saying it's an inside job, government's colluding with them, they're agents, and then here we have one of the masterminds behind the September 11th attacks having a fabulous feed with the Pentagon. After the attacks! You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood
Show. Oh, yeah. Inside job. Inside job. And if anyone says anything else, they're a friggin' idiot.
Yep. And we'll be right back.
We're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh, yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh, yeah. It's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time. Oh.
It's business. It's business time.
Oh, yeah.
Wake up. Wake up out there. It's frickin' business time on the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. We have a fabulous guest on the line with us today. Her name is Pam Killen, co-authored with Dr. Mercola, the New York Times best-selling book, The Great Bird Flu Hoax. And her new book, which we're going to be discussing today, is called Addiction, The Hidden Epidemic. Pam's been independently studying nutrition and natural health for over 20 years. Her interest in nutrition and natural health stems from overcoming a lengthy battle with chronic fatigue, as a lot of cannabis users currently suffer from. Chronic fatigue. All right, Pam, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Vinny.
Oh, it's absolutely fabulous to have somebody of your caliber on our show to make us look better. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about false pandemics before we get into the false drugs to cure them, really. Could you tell us a little bit about the great bird flu hoax?
Sure. I'd be happy to talk to you about it a little bit. I mean, we've just had another hoax. It's even bigger than the bird flu hoax. It was called the swine flu hoax, and it's still to a certain degree going on today. But as you probably have heard, Vinny, you know, there's about three international investigations going on behind the swine flu hoax from last year, and it was actually propelled by some British politicians who started to ask a few questions and suggest that there may have been a conflict of interest in that the advice that the British and American governments, for example, were getting happened to be coming from paid representatives or paid experts from the vaccine industry. And I'm sure, you know, guys like you and Will know, you know, when you start to see these conflicts of interest, you know, you really need to see a lot of red flags around that. And the governments should have been a little bit more, I'd say, discerning or less corrupt, shall we say, and not really gone ahead with this this frenzy that we had seen all last year.
What I found hilarious is when I was sitting down watching television in New Zealand about the swine flu pandemic, and at the time 6 people had died, and the news comes on, special report, pandemic, and it's got the words pandemic written in blood.
Oh no!
It's so hilarious. The propaganda couldn't be more obvious.
Well, they know, as you know, mainstream media knows that the way that they can get a lot of listeners or viewers, you know, the way that they can grab the biggest audience is by using things like fear. So it was basically the perfect storm in that, you had the perfect story, you know, to create fear. You had the sponsors happy. You had the media happy. You had viewers and listeners thinking that they were being protected, so they felt good about it. I mean, it was the perfect storm, and they can get away with this stuff as they have been for decades, if not centuries. I mean, we've had media, different forms of media out there for a long, long time, and it didn't matter if it was the town crier from centuries ago or troubadours or what have you. They knew how to spread fear. They knew how to spread propaganda, and that propaganda was really a very strong way to control the population.
And I think that they'll probably reduce their play cards of fear are sort of reducing somewhat, and people are switching off to a certain extent. So they're going to have to release something really bad or combine several fear mechanisms. I think that probably the next great fear mechanism that they should combine is terrorism and the flu pandemics. I reckon they should release a super camel flu. That'll make everybody really afraid.
A camel flu, a dog flu, a cat flu, a rat flu. I mean, they can come up with anything they want to as long as they've got the media there to share the frenzy.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. It's the camel flu frenzy.
And unfortunately, you know, all you have to do is have a couple of experts with, you know, a PhD beside their name to spread the fear. And they're being paid by the people who, you know, benefit from spreading the fear. And they need jobs just like anybody else needs a job. So they just go along with it. And it's really quite a shame because, you know, scientists and so on, they go to school, hopefully, for the, you know, to improve society, to improve our health, to really, you know, create positive change in life. But unfortunately today, the whole scientific community is basically, a lot of them have become prostitutes. They're prostitutes of science, and they're being paid by corporations to basically spew out what I call marketing-based science. It's not evidence-based science any longer.
How long has this been going on for? I mean, as far as I know, the mainstream medical establishment from day dot, more or less, has been more dangerous than not going to see a doctor.
Oh, by absolutely. Listen, I mean, we have over 80% of the population dying from chronic disease. And in the United States, they spend over $2 trillion on healthcare. Now, you tell me, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that people in the United States are not getting their money's worth with regards to healthcare. But you asked, you know, about the history where things really started to go awry was, I think, with the mastermind, Edward Bernays, who was the father of propaganda. And after the Great Depression, of course, came the rise of a guy like Edward Bernays, who he was the nephew of Sigmund Freud. And he took his uncle's you know, psychological data, his research, and used it to manipulate the masses. And one of the things Edward Bernays was genius at was figuring out how to use quote-unquote experts to promote products. And as you know, and you probably have seen these ads, is where medical doctors were used to promote cigarettes or smoking as something that was healthy and good for the lungs. And as we know now, of course,
oh, yeah,
it is this stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. More doctors smoke camels than any other cigarette. I remember seeing that ad. That's quite funny.
Yeah, and now now we see it in so many different areas. We see medical doctors endorsing, you know, as you touched on, Vinny, you know, these problems with these we see so many deaths every year because of medical error, in particular with regards to the drugs. I mean, a lot of research has been published showing that medical error is one of our leading causes of death in North America.
In New Zealand, the medical establishment, without including any accidents or any errors, is still the third leading cause of death. That's how it is when it's running perfect.
They're just experimenting. I mean, they really, you know, they're doing disease management and doing a lot of experimentation to see about how to manage disease when people who come in with, you know, complaints are obviously not well. And then they just sort of monkey around with all these, you know, newfangled ideas that have really little foundation in health, where I think what you and I are talking about has more to do with health care, where I, you know, and especially when I work with people, I work with fixing their digestion, getting their biochemistry intact. That's real health care when you can work with people like that. And then when you look at the alternative system, it's disease management. And if you're not fixing their diet, if you're not correcting their biochemistry, it's going to be real tough to get these people well. So it's no wonder they die.
See, Pam, the way I see it, the whole system is compartmentalized in everything. In anything you try and do, if you have a problem with an insurance company, for instance, they'll just say, oh, that's not my job, and they'll send you, you know, from India to Africa, so to speak, across the departments. They'll run you around. And it's the same with the hospital system. They break everyone up. They pretend your body is not a holistic unit. And they treat you like you're 30 different people. And there's never any sort of specialist there who puts it all together. And general practitioners are useless trash too most of the time. To be honest, they haul themselves out to the same corporations you're speaking of. So they get free holiday. They get holiday incentives over here to get trips to Fiji if they market a certain amount of a particular product.
They get the trip to Fiji, and their patient just goes on a massive trip.
That's right. And one thing,
the patient gets to go to the grave, and then
One of the individuals in my book is—he wrote the book "Overdosed," and Dr. John Abramson, and he's a Harvard medical doctor, and he put it very succinctly in the interview in the book, in that what's happening is basically the pharmaceutical industry enables this highly unsustainable medical system to exist. And one reason why that is because when you go see a medical doctor today, and he can very easily, within three or four or 5 minutes, write a prescription for a drug and get you out of that office, the faster he gets you in and out of that office, then the more money he gets paid, because the turnaround is much quicker. So if here I'm in Canada, for example, and under socialized healthcare, a doctor, I don't know what the figure is, but let's say per visit, the doctor gets paid $10 or $20 a head. Well, you do your math. If he can see 80 people in a day, he or she is going to get paid a lot more money. And prescription drugs enable that speed to take place.
Because you don't have to actually know anything or do anything or actually have any skill. All you got to do is just dope them up and then go to Fiji.
All you need to be able to do is follow flowcharts like a mechanic and diagnosing something. It's just like, oh, you have a cough and, oh, you have this. And they, okay, that box there, that drug there.
Yeah.
I'm just totally against the whole system, the whole idea of going to a doctor. I don't think in 2010, with what we know about the body and how we can, preventative care, taking steps towards ensuring our own health, I don't think we should even have doctors. I don't think we should have a public medical system at all.
Well, what happened in the 1800s was, the landscape was basically lined with alternative healthcare practitioners. That was the 1800s, and if somebody wasn't getting somebody well, then they would just simply lose their client base. So it was word of mouth. If you were actually getting people well, you would be, you would have lineups at the door. And unfortunately today, because we have our standard of care, our belief system as being this medical mafia, unfortunately people look to these people as if they have the answers when indeed they do not. And then on top of that, you have the confusion on the internet where you have paid representatives from the pharmaceutical industry demonizing natural healthcare practitioners and calling them quacks. And that leaves the average person really confused when I tell people somebody's been called a quack, take it as a compliment, actually, because that means they're probably getting people well.
Yeah.
And when modern science and most of their practices.
No one. Go on, Will.
Go, Vinny. Go ahead. Okay. I was going to say, modern science and most of their practices actually evolved out of the occult. It's a fact. And so they want to say, taking some organic therapy or crushing up some particular plant from outside is total witchcraft or whatever. Well, the whole idea of having a doctor in a social system is carries on from the old witch doctor days, and their practice itself is born out of the occult. If they want to look
at
it,
no wonder. No wonder all the Bond bad guys are doctors.
All the witch doctors are you talking about
I'm talking about in Bond movies, like James Bond, all the bad guys seem to be doctors. Where do you think they get the idea from? There's not that many creative people in Hollywood, is there?
Well, Bond wasn't written by Hollywood, but Bond was written by an MI5 agent called Ian Fleming. So Bond was actually written by one of the elite secret society members too, Mr. Fleming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, the real tragedy in this is I have a lot of registered nurses and doctors who talk to me, one-on-one, and I have their support. They want me to do this work because they're fed up with medicine today. They don't get to enjoy going to work every day because they don't get the pleasure of seeing their patients or their clients getting well. And that's really the tragedy of it all. if you think about it, I mean...
It's madness.
It is. You know? It is. I mean, think about it. Anybody who goes into medicine or nursing today, do you really think that their goal was to help enable a CEO of a company like Eli Lilly to make millions of dollars a year? They did not go to medical school or nursing school for that reason. And unfortunately, that's what's going on.
They went for their own
Personally, I don't even know why they take the Hippocratic Oath anymore. I think they should just change it and just take a Hippocratic Oath, because then at least it would be accurate.
Well, you know, if we could just turn the medical schools around, you know, and teach and have them learn nutrition. I mean, the person that I focus on in my book is Dr. Weston A. Price, and he wrote the book Nutrition and Physical Degeneration, and that book used to be taught in the medical schools before the Second World War. And of course, it was after the Second World War where we see the huge rise of Big Pharma. But before the Second World War, doctors actually used to learn nutrition in medical school. And so, you know, really, if we can turn the situation around somewhat and start encouraging people to use, you know, these really clear dietary principles that Dr. Price studied and wrote about in his book, I think we have a chance at having real healthcare, but right now it's a disaster. The whole system is unsustainable. It's imploding. I don't know if you've been watching the news lately, but you look at what they're forecasting over the next 10 years in terms of what they're going to spend on healthcare. It is absolutely mind-boggling. I mean, there's no way we can sustain ourselves with the projections. Yeah.
Well, the system's not going to go on for 10 years anyway, so they can forget about that one. It's not going to carry on as if for the last 10 years for another 10 years. But,
right.
No, it's so insane to think that doctors are not taught basic nutrition. In the 7 years they're there and all their smarts, you know, I mean, I can remember going to university, getting into the School of Engineering, and having these medical students go, you know, we had to get, you know, 30% better grades to get into ours. You know, we're elite, supreme gods. But they're so, you know, freaking retarded at the same time. They don't know or not interested in basic holistic sort of care. And you know, understanding that someone's body is a single unit, and you can't break them up and scatter them over a hospital. You know, you can't chop them up into pieces.
That's right. Well, you know, I mean, well, think about it, though. I mean, if we were healthy and happy, these people would be out of jobs. So there's absolutely no incentive to help us get healthy and happy.
Sure, it's just like the drugs all the gangs and the police, just like all the crime going around on the cops. You know, the cops want it to continue. They won't have jobs otherwise.
Well, I talk about it in my book, you know, the war on drugs. It's a total fiasco. It's an embarrassment. Since they've had the war on drugs, they've spent trillions of dollars on this war and gotten absolutely nowhere.
Yeah, sounds about right. Almost everything that the government says is a lie. And so why should the war on drugs or the medical establishment be any different? You're listening to The Vinny Eastwood Show. Our special guest is Pam Killen from PamKillen.com. And we'll be right back. Anybody out there boogieing down, doing the old stiddy itty, welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally, the Vinny Eastwood Show.com. Our special guest on the line is Pam Killeen. I was mispronouncing her name earlier, but apparently it happens all the time. Pam, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. That's great. Listen, on that note that we left off, I wanted to finish off by saying that the drug war has really been nothing more than a job creation program. And of course, you know, what does Obama want to do right now? He wants to put more money into the drug war. They're never going to solve the problem until they start looking at some of the solutions I have in the book, which is really about, you know, helping people feel good naturally. Right now, today, people feel lousy. They have chronic fatigue, they have depression, anxiety, they have sleep problems, all things that could potentially, you know, drive somebody to, you know, abuse a substance. I don't care if it's sugar, caffeine, prescription drugs, street drugs, I don't care what it is. People are gravitating to drugs today like never before in the history of mankind, and it's not solving the problem.
Mm. Well, I think that's about right, isn't it? The only reason why people really turn to drugs is because their life isn't good enough already. And I'd probably say that that's very true of myself. I mean, I have two cannabis convictions, and it was only until later on in life that I realized I didn't really need the drugs in order to have a good time, you know? It was just the fact that everything sucked so much that I was doing it.
Well, but it gets even deeper in the book, where the people that I interview who are part of an alliance, they actually have rehab centers for people on any kind of drug, and when they have an addict show up to see them, they do testing on them to see where their biochemistry is at. So they see how messed up their blood sugar might be, their thyroid, their adrenal. They may see if they have heavy metal toxicity. And then they put them in a program for 6 or 8 weeks and help basically detoxify their body, help build their body with nutrition. And by the time they're done, of course, they come out of these centers and they feel fantastic naturally, and they don't feel the craving for the drug. I just work with people one-on-one who are just, you know, mildly symptomatic, you know, may have a little fatigue, may have mild depression, whatever, may have some sleep problems, and I can help them, you know, generally speaking, one-on-one, and help restore their biochemistry with some very, very targeted supplements. But, you know, when somebody has a full-fledged addiction, you know, if they're using a lot of drugs, a lot of very harsh drugs, you know, they probably need to get into some of these centers. And unfortunately, because addiction and mental disorders are the elephant in the room, nobody wants to talk about them. And then the solutions that are on the table with regards to these problems really are not solving anything, because abstinence, although that's a good goal, shouldn't be the only goal. These people deserve to feel good. They deserve to feel joy. They deserve to be happy. They deserve to sleep well at night. And if you talk to anybody who's gone through rehab, generally they come out of these situations and, yeah, they may be abstaining, but they will tell you they generally feel terrible.
So can you give an example of some of these supplements that you would use to treat more minor ailments, I suppose?
What I do with individuals is I do hair tissue mineral analysis, so I can see where their mineral balance is happen to be at. Very commonly with addiction, I see a lot of copper toxicity, and then I have to use some targeted supplements to push and pull the minerals in the proper direction, so that that's, you know, minerals are your spark plugs. If they're out of proportion in your body, then you can feel really lousy and, you know, have poor blood sugar control and so on. And so, and then I use really, really specific targeted strategies to help heal the adrenal glands. And that's one thing a lot of people overlook is the adrenal glands. Doctors, you know, if you go to the doctor and say, you know, I'm tired, could it be my adrenal glands? And they test your adrenal glands. All they're going to test for is to see if you might have Addison's disease or Cushing's disease. They're not going to test you to see if you have adrenal insufficiency. And right there, that term, adrenal insufficiency or adrenal burnout, that is an epidemic today. And it has a lot to do with diet and nutrition. It has something to do with, in some cases, people who exercise too much, that can also really fry the adrenal glands.
Yep, exercising too much is bad for you. that's the funny thing, though, isn't it? There's such a plethora of different things that can go wrong with your body, right? And balancing everything out is something that many people have no idea how to do, right? And for me, it's personally just a little bit about eating decent food. That, you know, I mean, what was it? What was her name from Health Freedom America? I forget her name, but she said, you know, if you want to be real healthy, eat real food. You know, mm-hmm. pretty straightforward. And getting a little bit of exercise. I play a little bit of hacky sack, you know, to try and keep myself in shape. And I think that basically taking responsibility of your own health is probably your biggest protection against disease. After all, if you pawn off your own responsibility for your own health, it's very unlikely that any doctor that you go to see when you get sick is going to be able to help you very much.
No, they won't be able to help you because they don't have, as we talked about earlier, the fundamental laws of nutrition under their belt. They don't know what those laws are. I teach classes like 30 hours long, so I can teach people, you know, there's about a dozen fundamental laws to nutrition, and this is the work of Dr. Weston A. Price, and he traveled all around the world looking at healthy cultures and examining what they ate that made them so spectacularly healthy, and that was not just physically healthy, but mentally healthy as well. And so what groups like the Weston A. Price Foundation out of Washington has done is they've basically been able to summarize his observations and turn it into something that's translatable to anybody around the world, whether you live in New Zealand, Australia, Canada, the United States, England, doesn't matter. We all have these very, very nutrient-dense foods that are highly recognizable. They're not scary. It's not a fad diet that I recommend at all. I'm basically bringing it down to something very, very sound, and that is just return to traditional diets. Return to eating 3 square meals a day. 3 square meals, that's what we ate before the Second World War. And we were a lot healthier before World War II than we were after World War II. And in my book, I talk about how the degradation of our food supply happened, when it started to happen, and how it was made worse after the Second World War. And what happened during the Second World War is that into the food industry developed what are known as meals ready to eat, MREs. And these are dehydrated, you know, food packages that soldiers were taking out into the field with them and maybe using for a limited time frame. But what happened is that they spent so much money and time developing these meals ready to eat that after World War II, the shareholders, the food industry, wanted to make some more money on it. And that's where you start to see the rise of the processed food industry, predominantly in the last, you know, 40, 50, 60 years. These foods, you know, our ancestors would never recognize these foods. They are not designed to sustain us. They're designed to, you know, to sustain a soldier out in combat for maybe a couple of weeks at a time. But we should not be surviving and thriving on these nutrient deficient foods that we normally find in the middle aisles of a grocery store. You know, and yet, unfortunately, you know, 90% of our food dollars are being spent on these really damaging foods. And I'm not the only one saying this. Even the World Health Organization is saying this, but it doesn't get picked up by the media.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I've noticed that too. Everything being wrapped in foil like MREs are, because even plastic is permeable. And, yeah, so the initial investment in MREs, you say, was the sort of reason we progressed into the freeze-dried you know, artificial products that we have?
Yeah. I mean, if people were to simplify it and say, if you stick to the outer periphery of a grocery store, you're going to have a better chance at being healthy. It's those inner aisles where you find the most problematic foods. But unfortunately, that's where most people spend most of their time when they're shopping. I mean, you think about it. When you go into a grocery store, Vinny, you can't even see the back aisles of the store. I mean, they're all blockaded by these inner aisles, aren't they? So at least that's the way they're designed here in Canada. You can't see the real food.
It's the exact same thing here. You're going to say they're blockaded by 300-pound people.
Lumbering like a fleet of interstate buses, yes. And what I was, it's the exact same thing here in New Zealand with the supermarkets. I'll notice I walk in, and then it's like, wow, fruits, vegetables, nuts, deli meats. And then it's alcohol, sugary snacks, biscuits, what was it? Sauces, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, cleaning products. It's like, hold on a second. You go from healthy in the first aisle to death, 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 and more death before finally ending up in the milk and meat section where, you know, the rest of your shopping can be done. So by default, almost, people kind of gravitate far more towards all those middle aisles because it's like a no man's land, if you will. You know, you have to actually battle through those middle aisles in order to get to the rest. And the chances of somebody walking through just randomly getting one of those impulse item things like, oh, that tastes good, yum, yum, I'll buy that, you know. It's ridiculous because, well, more or less, the things that they think make them happy will in fact make them depressed and or ill.
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, these foods, first of all, they're designed to be addictive. I mean, make no mistake about it. The food industry knows exactly what they're doing. The foods in the middle aisles in particular are designed to be addictive. And secondly, you know, we know that these foods can cause things like depression and mood disorders because they're not really sustaining your nervous system. And that's what I get into a lot in my book is, you know, what foods actually do sustain or support your nervous system. And it's the foods that our dietary dictocrats are actually telling us to avoid. Those are the foods that actually make us feel good. And if you take apart the human body like you would a, you know, if you take apart a 747 jet and you want to see how that 747 jet was, you know, made, you take it apart piece by piece and then put it back together again. If you do the same thing with the human body, you'll find some very, you know, very particular common denominators around what makes us who we are. And there are some nutrients that I talk about in the book, you know, the long chain fatty acids that you would find in grass-fed meat and dairy products or wild fish. You know, you talk about things like, I talk about things like DHA, arachidonic acid. I mean, big words maybe, but these are nutrients that really support the nervous system. And if you are depleted in these nutrients, there's a lot of research now that shows that you will very easily develop things like depression, anxiety, sleep problems, and so on. And it goes back to what I said earlier. You know, if you're eating three square meals and you're not fat phobic or cholesterol phobic, you're probably going to be just fine. But unfortunately, the dietary dictocrats have scared us, terrified us away from eating the foods that we know sustained us for millennia.
And I think it only takes two generations for a lesson to be lost on a bunch of people, doesn't it? You know, it's like, hey, here we are. We're all healthy. We're all sweet. We barely need to go see the doctor. If anything's wrong with me, you know, I'll eat this or I'll eat that. Then I'm sweet as. There's no freaking problem. And then after World War II, it's like all of a sudden this massive ad campaign starts up. Hey, everybody, start buying all these refrigerators. Start eating all this freeze-dried food. Start driving around cars everywhere. And it's almost as if the advertising industry dictates our way of life to a certain extent. And I find that for a lot of people, it's very, very difficult to be the master and commander of your own ship these days because of the immense amounts of propaganda and, well, I would say social manipulation being conducted by the media and such other organizations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you think about what's happened in the last several decades, really, as we've been herded together in small geographic areas, so millions of people herded together in small geographic areas. This is, you know, unprecedented in the history of humankind. What's the easiest way to feed that many people in small areas? And that is to really push these processed foods, push more plant-based foods, and demonize the foods that actually sustain us.
Sounds about right. If it's good for you, the government tells you it's bad for you. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, which is very bad for you, and we'll be right back if you dare.
Look at me driving, and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure. My cause is noble, my power is pure.
Oh, I can hand out a million vaccinations and watch them all die in exasperation. Oh, yes, it's a Vinnie Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. If you have not listened to the show before, you probably won't listen to it again. Our special guest is Pam Killeen, the author of a couple of books about alternative health. And we were discussing over the break about a subject that's dear to most of our hearts, the most annoying humans of all time, vegans. Now, we're talking
about... I swear we ripped on like every sector of society possible.
Oh, no, there's still the a other few day left it was, to go. Don't worry, I'll get French. It eventually.
the French, the whole Asian continent, all secret society members.
At this point, everybody's got something wrong moving. With them, all right? And if we don't mess with them, then they'll never get it, and they'll never change. Okay, just like the old eugenicists that we've got running our medical establishment and trying to get our diets in order. Now
we're going
to
fix everything
back
proper.
To the old thing. Speaking of eugenics, as you do, we were talking about vegan diets and stuff like this. Could you explain a little bit, Pam?
Oh, absolutely. I have firsthand knowledge. I'm a recovering vegan, first of all. I did it pretty much all throughout the 90s. I became a vegan when I was very sick with chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia and thought it was a healthy diet, and I basically stuck to it for 9 years. Initially, and this is a common phenomenon with a lot of people who become vegan, is that they start to feel a little bit better, and they attribute it to the diet. But then in the long run, of course, the diet ends up backfiring on them. And eventually, of course, my experience was that I ended up with even more disabling fatigue and more pain with the fibromyalgia. So it actually ended up making me a lot sicker. And I was one of the first people in Toronto here. I live in Canada, but I was one of the first people here back in the early 90s to start teaching a raw food vegan diet. And now, of course, I regret it, but it certainly did teach me a lot. It taught me what not to do in terms of following a healthy diet. And what happens now is, of course, I teach a lot of classes and I work one-on-one with people. And most of my students, most of my clients are recovering vegans. So they all admit that they got very, very sick on that diet. And I'll tell you the first symptoms that they end up developing are that their memory starts to get really, really bad. And that's one of the first red flags, but they ignore it because they're being told that the diet is really, really healthy. So they can't connect the dots between the diet being unhealthy and they're having physical symptoms or mental symptoms. Second to that, then they start to get, you know, cold hands, cold feet, because their thyroid starts to slow down, and because the thyroid absolutely needs animal fats to work properly. Where men are concerned, they tend to start losing their libido. Women, of course, they either stop ovulating or they become less fertile anyway. And then they end up with things like more depression or fatigue. Serious sleep disorders are very common among vegetarians or vegans. And so on. So there's a lot of psychological symptoms that can develop on a vegan diet. And it's simply because, number one, they're eating too much sugar. It doesn't matter if it's a fruit, vegetable, or grain. All of these are carbohydrates and they contain sugar. So there's way too much sugar in the diet. So it puts them on this blood sugar roller coaster ride. Many of them become pre-diabetic. And again, that's something that they do not get diagnosed for. And anyway, it just turns into this massive fiasco. It's really deceptive because they believe that this diet is truly a healthy diet and it's healthy for the planet when it really isn't. And they lose roots. They lose connection with their family and their friends. Like you were talking earlier, Vinny, when we were off air about, you know, how do you cope with making dinner or eating with these people? they have to really stick to themselves, and it becomes a very tight clique. And if you're not a part of their clique, they think that they're better than you, and it's not the case. If they become infertile and they die off, that's no sign that they're better than anybody. You know, there's a real problem
that's
with being a
want,
vegan.
Though. That's
maybe
what they want.
It could be
most of the climate
well,
changes too.
Could be part of the it could be part of the genocide. You know, it could be part of the genocide. Just all I know is any diet.
Against meat? What about the arguments against meat? So in New Zealand, the steak has got a very high nitrate content, and of course, nitrates mm-hmm. are been linked to cancer and all sorts of things like that, and digestive problems. And so, what do you think about what meats do you recommend, and what sort of form?
Oh, no, that's a great question. It's a fair question. Because again, I'm not for factory farmed foods. That basically was my first book about the great bird flu hoax. A lot of that book was about the problems with factory farming. But the real solution lies in buying food from local farmers where you know how the animal has been produced or raised. So you want to make sure the chicken is out on pasture, the cow, the pig. You want to make sure all these animals are treated in a humane, sustainable manner. And that's the type of meat or animal food that you really should be gravitating towards. And fortunately, I think that what I've seen recently anyway, the numbers of vegetarians, the numbers of vegan are actually going down because they're starting to catch on that it's not about it's not about stopping the consumption of meat per se. It's about finding a more sustainable way to seek out these foods. So people are starting to move away from vegan or vegetarianism and moving more towards buying food from local farmers. And I know in the United States...
Do you recommend ham or do you recommend pork?
I'm of Irish and Scottish descent, and my ancestors lived very nicely on pork. But again, the pork would have been raised in a more sustainable manner. So I know that there's a lot of people out there who, they basically believe that pork is a dirty meat and this and that and the other thing. But, you know, you have to keep in mind that something like negative nutrition has been used for centuries, for thousands of years, actually, in order to change supply and demand in the food supply. So just to give you an example, if I demonize meat, what is it that people will generally gravitate towards? They'll move towards probably something like chicken, which is a cheaper meat, cheaper to produce too. And so you see the shift of supply and demand going on very commonly where negative nutrition is being used.
I'm wondering to myself whether or not the food supply is even safe anymore with all the GMOs and all this and all the misinformation and the vast majority of foods in supermarkets being poisonous, freeze-dried, processed, unnutritional whatsoever, and all these ridiculous dietary supplements that people are doping themselves up on. It's basically like they're on crack or something. Welcome to the New World Order. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will, and we'll be right back after the break with a little bit more eugenics. We need your sweetness, Unity. Well, here's the thing. There's a whole bunch of scumbags out there trying to divide us over all these different racial lines and medical lines and cocaine lines, as the CIA would have you believe. What I'm concerned about really is that people will start fighting each other based upon what's good for them and ironically not realizing the fact that by fighting each other, they're ignoring what's good for them, which is having a little bit of unity out there, you know, having a little bit of health and a little bit of common sense. And ironic I should say that, of course, because common sense is no longer common. It's actually pretty frickin' rare. Like uncooked meat. our special guest is Pam Killeen, and we've been talking over the break about eugenics and how fabulous it is, and just basically how it kind of infects every fabric of society, you know, and particularly the health industry. It's actually pretty frickin' scary when you really think about it. Just how corrupt are these people? And the answer is, I can't say, because there's no limit. All right, there is no upper echelon of corruption, genocide, or death that the medical establishment, Big Pharma, and Big Food, whether that be Monsanto, who coincidentally enough now own Blackwater. I can only imagine why they want to do that. There's no limit to it, right? So therefore, the public really need to understand that there shouldn't be any limit to resisting them either, okay? Unless, of course, you want to be steamrolled. And I've got no problem with that, you know? I quite like pancake human beings.
speaking of that, Vinny, I take it you've seen the movie Soylent Green. With Charlton Heston, well, it's a must see. You and your viewers need to at least revisit that movie. If you saw it the first time, go back to it. And one of the things that I actually didn't watch that movie. I studied that movie because it's very, very prophetic, and it has a lot to do with what's going on with our food supply today. Now, as many of you probably know, the movie ends on the fact that Charlton Heston finds out that the food bars that they're selling to the masses are actually made from dead, you know, euthanized human beings, and so what the people don't realize is before they came up with Soylent Green, they had other bars, food bars called, I think, Soylent Yellow and Soylent Blue or what have you. And Soylent, basically, in this movie, represents a company that controls over half of the world's food supply. So, you know, that sounds like a Monsanto or what have you. I'll finish. It sounds like we're going to a break.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll get back into the Soylent Green. Let's hope it doesn't get soiled before we get to it. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. And we'll be right back.
We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and roll, respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino Ranga, Tina Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so where do I stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV, contrabands. So kids act up and disturb our community. Uninformed public then consents to a planned absurdity. What? Replace our human rights with commercial slavery.
Yeah, welcome back.
They can loan it to you. They charge interest on the loan, but don't print the interest. So there'll never be enough money to pay off all the debt. What do you get? Crash and burn.
Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. With Will, our special guest is Pam Killeen, coming at us live from Canada, where apparently there's even a bigger kill rate on the food supply than in the United States. What was it? You said that 25% of Americans every year get sick due to food-borne illness, and 40% of Canadians.
That's right. Yeah. So our food supply is actually one of the worst food supplies in the world. And that's not according to me per se, but that statistic that you just mentioned, the 40%, comes right from our public health departments. And the second to that, we have a whistleblower here in Canada, Dr. Shiv Chopra, who wrote the book Corrupt to the Core, Memoirs of a Health Canada Whistleblower. Dr. Shiv Chopra speaks very openly about how unsafe our food supply here in Canada is. And I don't know why our food supply is more unsafe than, statistically speaking, in the United States. But maybe it's because we're further north and food might be coming from further away. I don't know why, but it really is an unsafe food supply. But unfortunately, in citing these statistics, public health, of course, is also pushing this agenda to do more irradiation on our food. And, of course, that's not going to solve the problem at all. What will solve the problem, of course, is bringing back the small family farmer, because, as we know, a local food supply is a much safer food supply.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it tastes better, too. This is the thing. All this mass-produced, well, let's just go ahead and call a spade a spade. It's crap, all right? It's all crap, all right? Grown by chemicals, doesn't taste anywhere near as good as it should, and quite frankly, it has to travel hundreds of kilometers, even thousands of miles in some cases, in order to get to where it's actually eaten. There's so many processing mechanisms that go on between it that the food that you receive is not the food that comes out of the ground, even if the food that came out of the ground was good anyway, which it ain't. You know,
no, it's
a catch-22.
It is. It's not. And I'm a big advocate for raw milk and help our farmer here in Canada, whose name is Michael Schmidt. And you guys would love this story if you haven't heard it already. But there were 20 armed officers who showed up at this guy's farm a few years ago and basically developed what is known as the milk war from raiding his farm and going after him for supplying raw milk to 150 families in Toronto. Now he's a legend. He's, you know, people from around the world are watching his story because he's fighting the law that banned the sale of raw milk back, you know, about 70 years ago. And so his case actually lasted a few years. And in January, the judge announced that he wasn't doing anything illegal and that buying a share in the cow or some sort of, it's basically like a cooperative, is indeed legal and that the government has no business getting involved in that contract. It's a deal between Michael and these 150 families in Toronto, and the government needed to butt out. And then what happened after that is, of course, our attorney general in all of his infinite wisdom decided to appeal the case. And that's going back into the courts right now. But I know that the whole world is watching this case because if Michael can change the law and basically declare raw milk safe here in Canada, it will then render raw milk safe in the United States. And it'll really make a lot of headway for the small family farm because, as you know, in New Zealand, dairy is central to the success, the financial success of any small family farm.
So Cam, can I ask this? The whole milk question, I've been quite divided about. Obviously, raw milk is a lot better than the pasteurized, hormone-ridden garbage they are overcharged for in the supermarket. But the whole idea of drinking the milk of another mammal is pretty much unseen in the rest of the animal kingdom. I was just wondering.
Well, that's not true. That's not true, actually. In the wild, one species will drink from another animal. But the argument, though, because I was anti-dairy for a long, long time, you know, as a vegan, I thought, you know, dairy had joined the dark side. But what people need to learn about dairy is that it's a really delicious and easy way to get what are known as the fat-soluble vitamins, which many of us are very deficient in. It's a concentrated way to get those fat-soluble vitamins. And so if you may not want to drink milk per se, but like high-fat, raw cheese, for example, is a really good way to get those fat-soluble vitamins, as would be, you know, something like butter or, you know, a high-fat yogurt or sour cream or whatever the case may be. All of these foods contain these nutrients that we tend to be deficient in because we've been so scared off of eating animal foods and that the animal foods that we do have, unfortunately, are raised in factory farms and then would be deficient in these fat-soluble vitamins. And I'm talking about things like vitamin A and vitamin D that we would have gotten in things like cod liver oil before the Second World War. And unfortunately, because of the rise of big pharma, cod liver oil fell out of favor. But those vitamins, vitamin A and D, are crucial for supporting things like your adrenal glands, your thyroid gland, your sex hormones, things like that. You need vitamin D, for example, to produce neurotransmitters in your brain. These are really, really important nutrients, yet we're not getting enough of them.
Isn't serotonin quite linked to vitamin D, serotonin production? And
Yeah, no, vitamin D helps to produce the serotonin. So when you go out into the sun, which is ideally where we're supposed to be getting our vitamin D, when you go out in the sun, you're rewarded in many ways. And one of the ways you get rewarded is because that vitamin D makes you feel happy, makes you feel better, because it's actually increasing your serotonin in your brain. And then what have they done?
Cass Sunstein, the White House science czar under Barack Obama, claims that conspiracy theories, the conspiracy theorists also promote going out in the sun. Have you read that white paper?
Infiltrated
9/11 truth groups. In the same white paper he wrote, he goes after people who promote the sun.
What mother or father, you know, a couple of generations ago wouldn't have said to their children, you know, go out and get plenty of air and sunshine. I mean, that was a mantra in every household, you know, at least when I was a kid. And, you know, since 1988, when the American Medical Association declared that the sun had joined the dark side, like cholesterol had joined the dark side, when that declaration took place, that's when you start to see the rise of things like autism. It's a direct correlation happening in 1988, you know, and unfortunately, you know, we're living like cavemen today when we really ought to be out in the sun and using the sun as medicine. You know, you use it judiciously. You go out in the sun slowly. You don't burn, you know, whatever the case may be. But, you know, part of being human today is how we evolved. We evolved in the sun. We were not afraid of the sun. This is all a man-made phobia, just like those, you know, pandemics that they keep telling us are going to happen. They're all man-made.
Well, we don't want to get into the evolution creation debate on the show. I'm kidding. But no, I wanted to know what you thought of items like spirulina and acai, if that's how you pronounce it. I personally am a bit of a fan of spirulina. And I know a lot of people say, hey, you don't need to take supplements because you should just have a balanced diet. But the truth is, who gets a balanced diet in the current GMO manipulated food stock? You know, so what do you think of things like spirulina, raw food supplements that haven't got all these binders and additives?
No, that's okay. Well, I used to work in that industry in California, of all places. But at any rate, I used to work in the green food industry. And now I just let my cow go out on the grass and eat the grass and let the cow eat the grass. I don't use those supplements anymore. I'm a minimalist when it comes to using supplements.
Fair enough, yeah.
Now, getting on to addiction, I kind of wanted to discuss this a little bit because we've got huge problems all over the world, methinks, about pharmaceutical drug addiction. And what I find interesting is that when you come to a doctor who's prescribed you a certain amount of medications and you say, oh, well, you know, I've got debilitating stomach cramps, I've got memory loss, I've got this, that, or the other, all of which, of course, are listed side effects on the pharmaceutical drugs, they say, oh, you must just be mentally ill.
Yeah, that's how they do it. I see it all the time. You know, women, especially women, come to me all the time and they say, you know, I'm not feeling very well. I can't sleep at night. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. I feel anxiety. And they come to me after they go see, a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist tries to put them on medications, and they just know that's not the right way to do it. And then, when, of course, you know, after I get them on the diet and so on and so forth, that they feel fine and they're happy and back productive, leading productive lives and so on. So, depression is not a Prozac deficiency. You know, ADHD is not a Ritalin deficiency. There are some very clear nutritional deficiencies and toxicities going on in people who have any kind of mood problem, including autism, by the way. So, you know, when you actually reverse the situation, when you actually go in and find the biochemical imbalances, and then you use these targeted supplements and a very sound diet, you know, a nutrient dense diet, and you, under the principle of using 3 square meals a day, that's when you can start to see people turn around and actually feel joy, feel happiness, sleep well at night, and not have to rely on drugs. Unfortunately, you know, the medical mafia doesn't make money under that model. So they don't gravitate towards that model. The only way we're going to change the system is, you know, one mouth at a time, one person at a time, and educating them about what to eat in order to sustain their bodies, their physical and mental bodies. So when you have so much money behind this medical mafia, it's a David and Goliath story. And so what I say is not going to be heard in the medical schools unless there's some sort of, you know, revolution that's going to happen. But that's not probably going to happen because people are too tired to go out and protest in the streets and declare that they're wasting our money on healthcare by not looking at nutrition and biochemical restoration and things along that line.
I love that one.
Yeah.
I didn't wake up for the revolution, man. Kind of slept in from my hangover. Yeah. I could imagine it.
You know, when I see people in France, when I see people anywhere in the world out protesting in the streets, I get a warm and fuzzy feeling. I think that's great. I think people need to go out and protest. Unfortunately, you know, like I said, people are just too tired. They want to stay in and watch Survivor or whatever reality TV they want to watch. But they need to be dedicating more time to doing food preparation for especially their children, which is one of the main reasons why I wrote my book on addiction, is because unfortunately our kids today, a lot of them only know how to eat out of a bag. They don't even know how to use a knife and a fork. We've got to feed these kids properly. And, they're our future. They got to take care of us when we're in our 80s. And right now, they're so mentally unstable in many cases. I mean, in childhood today, about 20% of children are diagnosed with some sort of mental disorder during their childhood at one point. They're not well, our kids. They're not getting out of bed in the morning. They're exhausted. They're depressed. They have ADD, ADHD, you know, oppositional defiant disorder. There's all these labels that are being put on our children today. And yet, instead of feeding them properly, they're being medicated or ignored. And unfortunately, their problems are going to get worse as they get into their 20s and 30s.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a two-tone attack on humanity. I mean, on the same time, they're trying to make money off of it. A friend of mine, he told me that the reason why Big Pharma is getting so big and they're pushing so hard is it's one of the main funding mechanisms of the elite at the moment, and they're trying to make sure that all their banking interests are protected through an extra income source. I can't account for that. But the other attack on humanity is just the eugenics agenda and to try and control humanity. I mean, Orwell with his doublespeak and all of these other things, this has been mapped out long beforehand. And controlling humanity through the use of drugs is not a new idea by any means. I used to look after autistic children, and I quit my job for basically one reason and one reason only, was because looking after the kids was far more depressing than I was capable of dealing with. All right. Reason for that was not because they were autistic or sick or anything like that and it made me feel bad. It was because I knew that they could be cured and their parents wouldn't do it. They wouldn't listen to me.
Well,
and,
I
couldn't take it.
Yeah, no, it's very discouraging. I have a woman in my book, a medical doctor, Natasha Campbell McBride, who wrote the book Gut and Psychology Syndrome, and she cured her son of autism. And here she is, a medical doctor. She used nutrition, and now her son is 13, 14 years old. He's just fine. But again, she knew about the importance of using animal fats and how our nervous systems absolutely cannot function properly without animal fat and cholesterol. And so, you know, this low-fat diet is really killing us in many respects. Not only is it, badly influencing our fertility rates, but it's also contributing to things like depression and anxiety and other mood disorders like autism. And this is not rocket science. I mean, I'm a layperson, and I go into the literature, and I can connect the dots like this. It's and then I have experts in my book, you know, basically saying what I want to say. And I have an army of people in my book basically saying the same thing, you know, return to 3 square meals and don't ignore the animal fats. This low-fat diet really is part of, and by low-fat, by the way, I mean a diet low in animal fats, is really part of the genocide.
What about these high-protein diets? I think the Atkins diet is one of them. What do you think about these real high-protein diets?
Well, basically, again, I go back to these 12 fundamental rules. And, you know, animal fat and animal protein existed in every culture around the world. There was no vegan culture anywhere in the world when Dr. Price traveled and studied the diets of healthy cultures. They had animal fat and cholesterol in every culture, and in different cultures to varying degrees, they had animal fat and animal cholesterol animal fat and cholesterol. But the other element had to do with eating fermented foods as well. So lacto-fermented foods were really important in every diet. So that would be things like sauerkraut or yogurt or what have you. And then you talk about soil fertility. You have to include a whole bunch of different philosophies or ideals around diet, rather than just picking on, for instance, animal protein alone or animal fat alone. It's the compilation of everything in that diet that will determine our health. And unfortunately today, because of one unique principle, and that principle being, you know, animal fat and cholesterol have joined the dark side, avoid it, eliminate it, reduce it, whatever the case may be. This is really what is deteriorating both our physical and mental health. And because one of the things that will happen is if you're afraid of animal fat, you will then gravitate to something really awful like margarine, you know, or some sort of liquid oil like soybean oil, or eat more carbohydrates in your diet, which are very very destabilizing for your blood sugar levels.
It's almost as if everything that you're told should be interpreted in the precise opposite way that you're told it should be. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, and we're a really bad show, and you shouldn't listen to us. And we'll be right back. Oh, yes. Jamming the big monkey wrench in the gears of the New World Order. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Our special guest, and quite frankly, I really enjoyed having her on, is Pam Killeen, coming at us live from Canada. And we wanted to get into her book and about addiction. But before that, she has something very, very special to tell us all a little bit about coffee, which many of us enjoy, but little of us know much about.
Well, I had to, you know, basically study coffee and the history of coffee when I was writing this book. And because, you know, face it, we all love coffee. We all, you know, many of us enjoy tea. So we do enjoy these caffeinated beverages. But what I learned is basically you have to be very careful with caffeine, because caffeine can actually trigger something like, depression or anxiety, sleep problems, a whole host of psychological issues. So you have to use it very, very carefully. And when you consider just coffee alone, you know, it's really new in our diet. In the Western world, we only really started drinking coffee in around the 1700s. And when we did drink coffee, it was really small amounts of coffee in tiny little tasses or cups. And of course, now it's evolved into, you know, your Starbucks big, huge, you know, grandes or whatever. And that's just totally unnatural to our bodies. Our adrenal glands are very sensitive to things like sugar and caffeine. And when you overstimulate the adrenal glands, what happens is you start to produce a chemical or chemicals called cortisol and adrenaline, which are your fight or flight or stress hormones. And when you start overproducing those hormones, you will then start underproducing really important other important hormones like your testosterone, guys, or your progesterone or your estrogen. And so it really creates this, you know, imbalance in your hormones, and it's not pretty. I mean, it can really, really disrupt how you feel. Your whole personality can be adversely affected by abusing a drug like caffeine. And as I mentioned earlier, I mean, if you are healthy enough, you probably can handle a little bit of coffee, but not a lot. And try not to do it every day, of course.
Mm. And this is bad news for a lot of people, you know, me not least of all, because, you know, over the last few days, Will's been telling me that, hey, coffee's actually not that good for you, Vinny. It stops the ability to put minerals in. So I was just like, oh. And I didn't have any coffee for 2 days. And it was interesting how much of withdrawal symptoms that I had from coffee. It's worse than anything I've ever withdrawn from before in my life. This chronic fatigue, man, just absolutely, it just slams you like a sledgehammer. It was almost as if my genetic code and every single part of myself was built upon molecules of caffeine, and then all of a sudden I took away the building blocks and everything's just going.
Yeah, you can have terrible withdrawal. One sign from when you know you're withdrawing from caffeine is when you wake up tired the next morning. That's a sign that you're withdrawing from caffeine, unless of course you have something really serious like chronic fatigue or something along that line. But really, caffeine is not the innocent drug that a lot of people paint it to be. And Will is right that it can actually deplete your body of certain nutrients, including your B vitamins, which are really important for your nervous system, of course. So, just be careful with it. That's all I can say. Be careful with caffeine, just like any other drug out there. On the break, I mentioned to you. Go ahead.
So I was going to say, when you lower testosterone, you also put yourself at risk of gaining weight if you're trying to lose weight.
Well, it can really influence your mood. I mean, it's not a good thing. And really, what you want to do is, since the history of mankind, we've always gravitated to drugs, so when I write this book, I'm not being puritanical by any stretch of the imagination. We know that prohibition will never work. Okay. It's not something that in the history we look back, we know it doesn't work because humans are actually naturally curious and want to experiment with drugs. But what's happened today is that we live in a highly addictive environment. And so we are more prone to addiction today, number one, because we just have so much more going on in the consumeristic, materialistic world that we live in. So there's so much more choice out there. There's a lot more there's a greater chance that we're going to become addicted. But second to that is because we have been starving our nervous system from the nutrients that keep us balanced biochemically, keep us feeling healthy and happy naturally. Because we've gravitated away from these foods, we are basically struggling with something called brain starvation. And when you starve your brain and you're feeling moody, you're far more likely to use a drug to compensate and to try and feel better or self-medicate. And so really it's that combination of those two things that we have created the perfect storm for this addiction environment that we're living in right now.
We have simultaneously a stressful life, and especially truth is like us when we realize that we're under attack from everything, under the sun. And I find this is actually a problem with a lot of truth is that we kind of tend to self-medicate using illicit substances. And, for the best part, I can't actually figure out how to get out of this totally, right? Because in order to stop any type of drug use, it requires a lot of re-education and re-adaptation to normal life. It's like it becomes part of your life, part of your mental coping mechanism with anything that's going on in your life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why I work so closely with people is because I'm educating them about how to repair the biochemistry so that they can feel happiness and joy and energized naturally without having to rely on a drug. I mean, that's I think where I can't imagine anybody not wanting to have that goal, quite frankly. I think we all want to be there. I think it can take a lot of work because there are so many distractions out there. Drugs can make things a little easier, but they certainly don't make things better for you. I mean, they really can disrupt your production of neurotransmitters in your brain. In fact, that's how they work. And so I don't know if you know this, but when you're using a drug of any kind, it stops your body from producing that neurotransmitter or brain chemical on its own. So that's why you become addicted to it. And so without that drug stimulating your neurotransmitter, you feel lousy. And unfortunately, what I do in the book is I talk to these therapists who know how to replenish those neurotransmitters by using very targeted amino acids. And that's the fuel. These amino acids are actually the fuel for specific neurotransmitters like things like serotonin or dopamine. And when you can fuel those neurotransmitters, then that can actually reduce or eliminate the craving for an addictive drug or even an addictive activity. And certainly if people want to use talk therapy, that's fine. But of course, talk therapy will only be limited in that it doesn't fix a biochemical imbalance. It won't fix, you know, B vitamin deficiencies, essential fatty acid deficiencies. It's not going to fix neurotransmitter deficits. Talk therapy is not going to fix heavy metal toxicity. Talk therapy is very, very limited. It can be very helpful, but it can be very limited if you're not fixing the biochemical imbalances.
Yeah, so this seems to be a huge problem in general, that we've got consumerism and choice, if you will, outweighing education vastly. And, you know, Right. You've already given us quite a few tips to think about on this show, I think, for everyone listening, because, you know, no one's living perfectly in a Puritan sense out there. But what are sort of like, you know, 10 or 5 or some fast tips to live healthier and feel better and do your body some favors?
Well, one of the most important things to do is to return to eating 3 square meals a day. And that means when you get up in the morning, you eat right away and you have a wholesome breakfast that stabilizes your blood sugar and fuels your nervous system in general. And unfortunately, of course, we've been scared away from eating bacon and eggs. And I'll just use that figuratively, but a bacon and egg style breakfast is very, very healthy in the morning, no matter what our dietary dictocrats tell us. That is a healthy breakfast. And then for lunch and dinner, again, just sort of meat and potatoes. I say this figuratively, but a meat and potato style breakfast and dinner is also very healthy. And if you do eat potatoes, of course, you want to make sure you're loading that potato up with lots of butter and high fat sour cream. And when I do classes, the men in my classes, they jump up and celebrate, and they love my classes because I'm telling them to eat the foods that they actually enjoy to eat. You know, I'm not telling anybody to eat an extreme diet. I'm just asking people to return to basics, fundamentals.
And how do they keep the weight off that ensues from? See, because we used to have lifestyles, obviously, hunting, gathering, going out, wandering through the forests and stuff, and no one does it anymore. So how do we actually keep that weight off when we're eating in that manner that we should, but then with office jobs and sitting around on our asses all day playing video games, watching movies as a society?
Uh-huh. Well, keep in mind that it's really not fat that has made us fat. Since we've reduced our consumption of fat over the last 50 to 60 years, we're fatter, sicker, and more depressed than ever before. So we know it's not fat that's causing heart disease. We know it's not fat that's making us fat. What causes us to become fat is carbohydrates. And we know that carbohydrates drive insulin, and insulin drives fat. And over the last 50 years, we've been increasing our consumption of carbohydrates. So we have to really monitor closely the amount of carbohydrates we're consuming. But fat is very stabilizing for your metabolism and very healthy for things like your thyroid gland. So if your thyroid is very, very sluggish, of course, we tend to gain weight. But animal fats fuel and help support the thyroid gland. So in essence, and I'm oversimplifying a rather complicated thing, but animal fats are very, very good for your metabolism. So it's a bit of a myth to think that, you know, fat is going to cause us to be fat. That was really to just hide the fact that it was sugar that was causing a lot of the problems. You know, unfortunately, the sugar industry is a powerful, powerful lobby in the government. And so
carbohydrates mainly mean sugar, high, rich content. And fats, do you mean saturated or unsaturated? Or
I'm basically saying that the fats that we really should be focusing on are the fats that come from animal foods. So that could be anything from, you know, butter, lard, tallow, fatty animal meats like lamb, you know, certainly organ meats like liver and kidneys. All these foods are what we thrived on and survived on for millennia. You know, when we were hunting and gathering, when we lived rather primitive lives, of course, when we hunted an animal and killed it, the first part of the animal that we ate was always the organ meats because those were the most nutrient dense part of the animal. And yet today our dietary dictocrats tell us, oh, those foods are so bad for us. Stay away from them. You know, anything that they tell you is bad for you, you probably want to eat. So like you said earlier, do the opposite.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that people have to understand about government and all these big institutions, okay? The sugar industry, by all means, is not a bunch of sweeties, as they would make out. And the government is not loving as they would make out. Basically, here's the rule. Whatever you're told, believe the exact opposite, and that's probably far more likely to be correct than whatever you're told. All right?
If you're told that
fat is bad for you... Well, if you're told... Well, yeah, I know. You also have to do a heck of a lot of research in order to substantiate this, but the general rule is the same. You know... If the government tells you that vaccines are good for you, that means they're bad for you. If the doctor tells you that drugs are good for you, it means they're bad for you. If they tell you that getting a breast screen will help you prevent breast cancer, it means the breast screen will actually cause breast cancer, and so on and so forth. It's almost as if the world that we live in has been built upon a, I don't know, like a Lego land of lies that have all interlocked and just going crunk, 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 stacked on top of each other, and basically all you got to do is just grow up and stop playing Lego.
Part of the team, don't they? They want to be part of the crowd. I had an interesting
question. Herding mentality.
Yeah. I was going to ask, what do you think our body types are meant to be like? You know, we're trying to say how we're meant to eat and you know, in accordance with what our bodies, you know, we have been used to for thousands of years. What do you think a male or female body type was actually meant to be? How much fat are we meant to carry? Things like this.
Yeah, oh, that's a loaded question. Basically, in terms of consumption, as somebody myself who's Irish and Scottish, my ancestors would have eaten about 70% of their calories from animal fat. That's a heck of a lot of calories from one part of the food system. So, you know, just don't be afraid of animal fats. That's my bottom line. You know, those are foods that sustained us for a long, long time. And of course, me being Irish and Scottish, we know how really historically healthy they were. You know, in some cultures, they would have eaten less animal fat, but they were still eating, you know, very high quality animal foods because they would have been pastured or wild. But as we get older, you know, we do tend to gain weight, and especially women after the age of 40, it's very natural and normal to gain a little bit of weight.
There ain't nothing wrong with it. You know, I mean, seriously, take a little bit of perspective into account here, ladies and gentlemen. If your food supply is poison, then it would probably be logical to assume that whatever you're consuming ain't that good for you. So get something that is nice. Get something that's natural. Get something that's from the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. We'll be right back.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Oh yes, the times, they are a-changing.
And writers and critics who prophesize with your pen. And keep your eyes wide.
It seems that a lot of the media and, here's the fact of the matter, as far as I see it, and I could be wrong, I certainly frickin' hope I am. The people that have been elected to be in charge running society don't really have any power. And the people that are totally unelected, that really control society, are the ones who are holding all the keys to all the doors. And as free humanity, it's our responsibility to find out what we can do to stop it. And it turns out that it's not actually that difficult. It's a daily thing. In your daily life, if you resist the New World Order, you are part of the solution. In your daily life, however, if you tell people, oh, you're not providing any of the solutions for me, you're just going on about the problems and stuff like this, you're not part of the solution, and in all likelihood, you never will be. And with people like that, I just, you know, walk away just going, that guy's going to a FEMA camp.
I tell you, yeah. One thing people can do to really irritate them is just to be happy and healthy. I mean, you know, the sicker and unhappier we are, the more they can control us, the more money they make from us. So that's one of the goals I have anyway with my work, is to make sure people are feeling better and that they're happy. And I know that that's going to irritate the powers that be.
Hey, and that's kind of what I like to do on this show. I used to be a bully, believe it or not, in my earlier school days, after, of course, being bullied myself and then turning into what I hated and despised and suffered from. So now I'm kind of getting back into that, and I'm kind of like a New World Order bully, you know, like, you know, just make fun of them and ridicule them and make their lives just that much more difficult. And if being happy, if being healthy, and if being a nice guy and caring about the rest of humanity makes a difference in that matter, then why the heck wouldn't I do it? After all, apparently, according to a study released by The Guardian about 5 years ago, I believe, bullying is actually a release of endorphins. You can actually make yourself happy by bullying people. Isn't that interesting? And I thought, wouldn't it be fantastic if everybody decided that, hey, you know what's going to make me real happy? I'm going to go and bully my politicians daily.
Just hang out outside,
throw eggs at them.
They need guidance. They need help from all of us. I mean, like you were touching on earlier, we're the ones that are really in control. You know, they're just there supposedly for us. Unfortunately, they're not. They're there to protect the profits of industry. And, you know, the system is all, you know, backwards, really. Have you seen the documentary The Corporation, by the way?
Mm-hmm.
You have?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that was fantastic. I mean, they tell us right there in that documentary, you know, the corporations are allowed to lie. They're above the law, you know. And I think what consumers need to know is that when they're hearing anything from the corporate mouths, you know, that you have to assume that they're lying all the time because that's what they're allowed to do. And that's how I think we can be more discerning. That's how I think we can protect ourselves a little bit more because the politicians, unfortunately, are, you know, I don't know, they're a little slow or stunted or corrupt or whatever the case may be, but they're not the ones that are protecting us. So you have to really, if every man, mm-hmm, go ahead.
Final quick question, Pam, and it's a bit of a controversial one and, you know, something that might upset a few, but do you think there's an active campaign to try and feminize men and promote homosexuality and to try and push a lot of that hemisphere of issues too?
Well, I'll tell you something that I'm writing my next book, and I've actually written the documentary. It's called The Rise and Fall of Human Sexuality. And what is happening with men today, and it's actually largely caused by, or I mean, there's a lot of different variables, but one of the variables that's causing it has to do with the video game addiction. And young men and boys, of course, are obsessed with a lot of these video games like Warcraft. And because they're so distracted with these video games, they're not excelling at school. They're not even going to university. I mean, girls are surpassing boys right now in terms of academics. And thirdly, another thing that's happening is young men are not seeking out careers. So that what they're doing is they're actually staying at home and nesting, if you want to call it that, by playing these video games. So they're very, very happy today to work part-time at Starbucks or McDonald's or what have you. And, you know, you'll see men in their 30s doing this, and they're not looking for a girlfriend or a wife, but they're playing video games like Warcraft because that's where they actually feel like men. And so one of the psychologists that I interview in my book on addiction, actually, he told me, he says he has groups right now where he helps men. He teaches men how to become men. They don't know how to be men anymore. And so, yes, I agree with you, Will. Absolutely. There's definitely something going on to really distract men from being men. And I want to address a lot of that in my next book because it's a huge concern, obviously, for society. And again, it's something that people aren't really talking about. So I appreciate you bringing that up.
Yeah, and real women actually really love real men, you know, and real men love real women. It's ironic as it sounds. Come on. You know, seriously, ladies and gentlemen, get your head out of your aspartame.
And I just want to encourage people to send Julia Gillard, the, you know, dictator of Australia, an abusive email for saying that one of her insiders who claimed that 9/11 was an inside job is stupid and wrong. She says, obviously, they are stupid and wrong. They meaning conspiracy theorists. There you go.
Well, thank you so much, Pam Killeen, for coming on the Vinnie Eastwood show. I'm sure you've probably enjoyed it just as much as we have. In fact, we probably enjoyed it a little bit more than you. And, hope you come back on next time. And, basically, it's the end of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Those of you who are stuck on Friday, we're already on Saturday here in New Zealand. And believe me when I tell you, it looks fabulous. So let's hope that you enjoy what's going down forever and ever. We love you, and we'll be back next week.
Thanks, guys.